For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's November the 27th, and we are beginning Parshas Tazria, page 608. Parshas Tazria is primarily about tzaraas, the various types of tzaraas that one can get, particularly on one's body, as opposed to on one's house. However, before we get to the discussion of tzaraas, there is a discussion of childbirth, and that is the first chapter over here. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber al bnei Yisrael Lemor, speak to the Jews saying, Isha ki sazri av yalda zachar, when a woman conceives and gives birth to a male child, v'tama shivat yamim, she shall become tummy for 7 days, kimei nidas devosa titma. So the English translates that as, as during the days of her separation, what is that word?
Infirmity. Like
okay.
Infirm.
Yeah, no, I got it.
Shall be contented.
Yeah, no, I understand the word. I couldn't read it. Okay, so which means that she'll be tamei the same way she is when she is tamei as a nida. Mm-hmm. When she gives birth, childbirth renders a woman tamei the same way as when she is a nida. Uvayom hashmini, and on the eighth day, yimol besar arla, so then you have to give that boy a bris milah, circumcision. Ushloshim yom ushloshes yamim teishev vidmei tahara, and for 33 days she shall sit or remain with pure blood, tahar blood. B'chol kodesh lo siga, she shall not touch anything sanctified. Vela mikdash lo savo, she may not come to the Beis HaMikdash. An melos yamei tahara, until the days of her purity are finished. If she gives birth to a female, then she shall be tamei 14 days, like when she's a nida. And then for 66 days, she sits or remains with tahar blood. And when the days of purity are over, whether it be for a boy or for a son or for a daughter, Tavi keves ben shnaso leola, she shall bring a sheep, a year-old sheep, as an ola, a burnt offering. Uven yona osor lechatas, and then as a sin offering, she brings a bird, either a ben yona, dove, or a tor, or is that a pigeon?
Turtle
dove, okay. No, the first one's a turtle dove. This one is
a turtle
dove.
A young
is a dove.
Oh,
I see. Okay, fine. El Pesach Oel Moed El HaKohen, to the entrance of the Oel Moed, to the Mishkan, to the Kohen. V'yikrivo lifnei Hashem v'chiper aleha, he shall bring it before Hashem and atone for her. V'tahara mimekar dameha, and she will become pure from the source of the blood. Zos taras hayoledes, this is the law of one who gives birth, la zachar ol nekeva, for a male or for a female. V'imosim tzayada deisev, she cannot afford a sheep. Then Then she shall take two doves, oshne bnei yona, or two turtle doves, echad leolav, echad lechatas, one as a burnt offering, one as a sin offering, v'chiper aleha hakohen v'tahera, and the kohen shall atone for her, and she shall be pure. So, before we discuss why all these things are happening, let's discuss what is happening. So this is a confusing discussion here, and even those who have gone through this parasha many times often do not fully grasp what is happening with these rules. So first let's discuss what the rules are. Then in addition to that, we have to discuss what happens today, because we don't follow this exactly today. Today we're more stringent than what it says here in the Chumash. So the rule is, normally, when a woman becomes a nida, normally, not about childbirth, So normally, a woman is tamei for 7 days. So for nida, typically it is 7 days of impurity. 7 days. Now, what that means, what does it mean she's impure? What does that do? There's, as we've learned many times already in Parashat Shmini, there's nothing wrong with being impure. Impurity is a way of life. People become impure all the time. That's normal. And let's see.
So, he's sitting down here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've swiped them. See that? So.
I have morphine.
So what does it mean to have 7 days of impurity as a nida? So it means, like all people who are impure for whatever reason, a person who is impure cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash. A person who is impure cannot eat from a karbon. A person who is impure, if they are a Kohen or married to a Kohen, cannot eat Truma. So those are the most direct consequences of being impure, which means that for most people, it does not affect their daily lives. So you're impure. Nida brings with it one other element, which is separation between husband and wife. That's only true about Nida and also the related type of tumah called zava. Zava is also a form of nida. But that includes a separation between husband and wife. There is another impurity that also separates between husband and wife, and that is the impurity of tsaras. Tsaras also does, which we'll learn about later. Of course, tsaras can affect either a man or a woman. But either way, they become separated from their spouse. But that's a separate discussion. But nida or zava creates a separation between husband and wife. We're not going to discuss zava tonight. We're only going to discuss nida. And nida creates a 7-day separation. At the end of 7 days, she goes to the mikvah, and then she becomes pure. She becomes tahar. That means that she can now go to the Beis HaMikdash. That means that she can eat from a karbon. It means if she's married to a kohen, she can eat from the truma, and she's also permitted to her husband. All the things that the tuma of nida caused get removed when she goes to the mikvah. Yeah?
Are you doing it strictly according to what was written in the Torah?
Yeah.
This is strictly according to what was written in the Torah, not what was accepted by the Jewish people later.
No. This is what was written. This is before the sages made any kind of decrees. That's
Thank
all.
You.
Now, in regular Nida, there are no clean days. There's no 7-day clean days or anything like that. That's Zava. Today, we're not sure what is a Nida, what is a Zava, which is why we count clean days. But that's not relevant to our discussion tonight. Tonight, we're only discussing what the law is in the Torah. Okay. So again, so these things was included in, what is included in this would be Beis HaMikdash, it includes not eating from karbanos. It includes truma. And it includes separate, well, we'll call it
relations.
We'll call it spouse. Okay. Now, the Torah tells us when a woman gives birth to a son, then a woman is tamei for 7 days, the same as nida. So this will also apply to childbirth of a son. It'll be 7 days of separation. Now the Torah says more about a son. But before we discuss what it says more about a son, I'm going to jump ahead to daughter. So the son, it is also 7 days, and all these things apply. For childbirth, for a daughter, the Torah tells us that the time is doubled.
Wow.
It is 14 days. That's what it means when it says in Pasuk Hey, in verse 5, Vimne Keva Seleid, if she has a daughter, Vitama Shivuayim Kinidasa. She'll be Tame for 2 weeks, for 14 days, the same as when she is a Nida. So the same things apply, but not only for 7 days, but for double that amount of time, for 14 days.
Why?
Because.
Oh, first we're getting the what. I don't want to hear any questions about why. Okay. So this is the reason why, is because the Torah says so. We're going to try to understand what the Torah has to say, but this is what the halacha is. This is what the Torah says. Fine. So that is the law of Tumah for a woman who gives birth. Then the Torah tells us about Tahar days, about pure days.
One question. Does that also mean if they have a C-section or any type of birth?
So it would seem it should make a difference. It would seem that way, but we can discuss that separately. Okay? Now, that is your typical, that's the Tumah that we've been talking about until now. Tumah we're used to. We know what Tumah is. Tumah is based on Mikdash, Karbanos, Truma. Here we have an added element of spouse. But then the Torah talks about clean days. It talks about pure days, and this is very confusing to people. The Torah tells us that after the 7 days are over for a son, so then, after the 7 days are over for the son, there are 33 days of Demei Tahara, which is, how did it translate it here?
Pure blood.
So there's 33 days of something. Which you have to explain those 33 days. The Torah tells us the same is true for a daughter, but it's not 33 days.
66.
It's 66 days.
Double.
So the pattern is the same, that it is doubled, just like the days before were doubled for a daughter. Here also, the days are doubled. Now, what is the nature of these days? The Torah calls the days pure. It says that she sits with pure blood. But then immediately, in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, it says 33 days, she shall remain in blood of purity. And then immediately it says, B'chol kodesh lo sigah ve'al hamikdash lo savo. She may not touch anything sacred, and she may not enter the sanctuary until the end of the pure days. Now, in what way are these days pure? If during these days she cannot touch anything sacred, nor can she enter the sanctuary. In other words, during these 33 or 66 days, she may not go to the Beis HaMikdash, she may not eat karbanos, she may not eat truma. So then, in what sense is the Torah calling these days pure days? What, in what regard are they pure if, in fact, she cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash, she cannot eat karbanos, she cannot eat truma? The answer is?
She stays away from her spouse.
Okay, she does not have to stay away from her spouse. That's the difference. Pure means regarding spouse only. Meaning, during these days, she cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash, she cannot eat karbanos, she cannot eat truma, but she is pure for her spouse.
Uh-huh.
Am I spelling spouse correctly?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So, that is the only difference between the 7 days for a boy and the 33 days of the boy, the 14 days for a girl, the 66 days for a girl. So during those 33 days of a son, meaning from day 8 to day 40, and the 66 days for a daughter from day 15 to day 80, during that time, she is now permitted to her spouse.
She had to go to the mikveh first?
Yes.
After the 7 days?
What's that?
After the 7 and 14 days, she has to go to the mikveh.
Yeah, she goes to the mikveh, and she is permitted to her spouse, but not permitted to the other things. So she's pure from one element of the impurity that came before. Then, on day 41 after having a son, or day 81 after having a daughter, that's when the Torah says she brings this set of sacrifices. One ola, one burnt offering, one chatas, one sin offering. It's supposed to be an animal and a bird, but if she can't afford it, then it's two birds. And then she can now go to the Beis HaMikdash. And now she can eat karbanos, now she can eat truma. So that's the complete purity, is after the entire time is over. After
the twins, a boy and a girl.
Then it would be till day 80, because, well, then you'd have to be stringent both ways. Let's get this down first.
Stringent for the girl. Okay. You have to be for the
okay.
girl.
Okay, so yeah, you have to be for the girl. Right. Now, how is this understood? Meaning, why is it not why did the Torah say this, but what is the mechanics behind this? So, we've talked before about there being, with certain types of tumma, all you have to do is go to the mikvah and the tumma goes away. If a person comes in contact with a dead animal, so, person is tamei. They go to the mikvah, now they're tahar. However, being tahar, there can be various stages of tahara. There is something called, as we learned earlier, a tevul yom. Tevul yom means a person who went to the mikvah that day. The halacha is that if a person is tamei and they go to the mikvah, so a person is tamei at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they go to the mikvah. That removes the tumah. But if he's a kohen, he still may not eat truma until nightfall. He has to go to the mikvah, plus have what we call Harev Shemesh nightfall. Then he can eat truma. There are some types of tuma that not only do they have to go to the mikvah, wait for nightfall, but then the next day they have to bring a karban, and when they bring the karban, now they can go into the Beis HaMikdash. For example, that is true of the tumma of a zav. A zav is a male zava. A zav is a female. A zav is a male. That type of tumma. Then he has to count 7 clean days. Then he goes to the mikvah. He waits for nightfall. Then the next day he brings a karban. After he brings the karban, now he can go to the Beis HaMikdash. So it's a 3-step process of becoming tahar. Mikvah, nightfall, karban. Some tumas don't require a karban. It's just mikvah, nightfall. That's all that's necessary. The stage of being between having gone to the mikvah but not having had nightfall is called tevul yom, which literally means having immersed that day. When a person has immersed that day, they still need to wait until nightfall before eating truma.
But they can go about their day as they would have.
Yeah, go about their day as they would have. The Gemara explains that during the 33 days after having a son, from day 8 until day 40, and during the 66 days after having a daughter, from day 15 to day 80, the woman, the mother, is considered to be a Tvulas Yom Aruch, which means she's considered to have immersed that day for a very long day. She has a 33-day period of time where she's called having immersed that day, or a 66-day period of time where she's called having immersed that day, which means she's tahar, she's pure regarding those things that don't require nightfall. But regarding those things that still require nightfall, she's still tameh. So of this list over here that we have, the Beis HaMikdash requires nightfall. Karbanos require nightfall. Truma requires nightfall, but the spouse does not. So when she goes to the mikvah after day 7 for a boy, after day 14 for a girl, she now is in the status of a person who's gone to the mikvah that day for the next 33 days for a boy, or 66 days for a girl.
She's not permitted.
What's that?
But is she going to the mikvah?
No. Oh. No, she does not go to the mikvah again. She's now permitted to her husband, but she's in the status. She's in the category of a person who went to the mikvah that day, but has not had nightfall yet, and therefore cannot eat truma, cannot have karbanos, cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash. on after day 40 is over for the boy, or day 80 is over for having a daughter, that night is now nightfall for her. In other words, it's like a delay. It's the delay. Instead of, she went to the mikvah after 7 days, but her sun doesn't set, her S-U-N, doesn't set until the night of the 41st day. Or for a daughter, she went to the mikvah after 14 days, but her sun, S-U-N, doesn't set until the night of the 81st day. That's when the sun is considered to have set for her. Then the next morning, she brings her karbanos, and now she's permitted in the whole list. That's the mechanics of what is happening with a woman who gives birth. This is very, very significant, because what it means is that she's permitted to her husband but cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash. It's an in-between stage. But it's more than that. Not only is it an in-between stage that she's permitted to her husband but she cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash or eat truma, but in addition, the Torah is telling us that even though she may bleed during that time, she's still permitted to her husband. Where normally, when a woman does have any kind of a discharge of that nature, she becomes prohibited to her husband because it is either nida or zava. But during those 33 days after having a son, or during those 66 days after having a daughter, she is bidmei tahara, blood of purity. That means even though there may be blood, nevertheless, she is permitted to her husband. It's a very unusual circumstance, and that is what the Torah is saying about these 33 or 66 days. So in a certain sense, these 33 days after having, from day 8 to day 40 after having a son, or day 15 to day 80 after having a daughter, in a certain sense, these days are very stringent. She's tamei to go to the Beis HaMikdash for a very long time. That's a long time, especially after having a daughter. 80 days, 80 days is 2.5 months that she cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash. It's very, very stringent. On the other hand, it's very, very lenient that even though she has discharges that would normally prohibit her to her husband, she is permitted to her husband. That is this very unusual circumstance of these pure days after having a son from day 8 to day 40, after having a daughter from day 16, day 16 to day 80.
Is she obligated to go to be with her husband? I mean, she may just say, I've had enough. I don't want to, not now, I'll wait.
It doesn't sound good.
That we're not going to get into tonight. Now,
do we hold by this now?
No, we do not practice this now. The reason we do not practice this now is because we don't know the difference between the childbirth bleeding and the nida bleeding. We can't discern the difference. In the time of the Gemara, they were able to tell the difference between what they look like, and we don't know the difference. So therefore, for us, we cannot use this leniency because we don't know the difference between the two. And therefore, after childbirth, a woman is treated the same as always, which would be that if there are any discharges that look like blood, then she is prohibited to her husband, and if not, she's permitted to her husband, the same way that every other case is dealt with. But this is the law according to the Torah. Now, the carbon that she brings on day 41 for a boy, day 81 for a girl, so that carbon, as we said, is an ola, which is a burnt offering, and a chatas, which is a sin offering. And after they are brought, she now can have karbano, she can go to the Beis HaMikdash, and she can eat truma. Yeah.
Is the reason double for the girls going back to time of Chava?
It doesn't seem that way. It doesn't seem that way. We'll explain that. We'll explain what the Gemara says. Now, the Torah here also interjects the point that a boy on the eighth day has to have a bris milah. We already know about the mitzvah of bris milah, of circumcision. Where do we know that from before this point in the Torah?
Abraham.
From Avraham Avinu. We already know it from Parashas Lech Lecha, when Avraham has his bris milah. And in that commandment to Avraham to have a bris milah, included there is a commandment to his children to have a bris milah. But it is repeated here that on the eighth day, you have to give the son a bris milah, a circumcision. It is curious that it is placed here again, and therefore our sages tell us, why is it here? Why is it mentioned here that on the eighth day he should have, you should give him a bris milah? So the Gemara says that that the reason why it's here is to emphasize that really the bris milah Hashem may have commanded it to be before the eighth day. It didn't have to be the eighth day. Why did Hashem delay it until the eighth day? Because since a woman is prohibited to her husband for the first 7 days after having a son, Hashem delayed the bris milah until day eight so that husband and wife do not have to be separated at the time of the bris milah. Because then it would not be a full celebration between the husband and wife with their bris milah of their son. And as a result, the bris milah is delayed. We don't delay it. The Torah tells us to delay it until the eighth day. Now the eighth day is a requirement, which means you're not allowed to do the bris milah before the eighth day. A bris that is conducted before the eighth day is an invalid bris and must be done again. Now you can't do it again because the way a bris is done is that a certain part of the skin is removed. You can't remove it twice. And therefore there's a discussion in the Gemara what is to be done in the event that the bris milah is done too early. So now what? What do you do about that when you get to the eighth day? This does happen, unfortunately, when a circumcision is performed in the hospital. It can be done far long before the eighth day. It can be performed by a non-Jew, which is questionable whether that's acceptable or not. And what does one do if it was done prior to the eighth day? There is a discussion about this. Some say there's nothing you can do. It's no good. That's all. And this, you can't repeat it. It's just done. And unfortunately, this young man will never have a proper bris milah. However, that is not the way we rule. What we rule is that a hatafas dam bris is performed. Hatafas dam bris means that a little bit of blood is extracted from that area of the body, and that counts as the bris milah in lieu of being able to remove the foreskin. Because since it's already been removed, then the only thing that can be done is to remove a little bit of blood. And that is in fact what is done today in the event that either a Jewish boy was circumcised prior to the eighth day, or if there is a convert who was circumcised when he was not Jewish and now wishes to convert, then there is a little bit of blood that is taken. It is a very minor procedure. It is not surgical at all. It does not require any kind of time to recuperate. It is a very, very, very minor procedure. It is not a big deal. It may be embarrassing, but it's not a scary thing. It is not a terrible thing. Whereas real circumcision done to an adult male is a major surgery and is very scary and painful and all of that, which is why Avraham Avinu had such a difficult time having his bris milah at his advanced age, and also for the adults in his household. But the hatafas dam bris, the removal of just a little bit of blood, a drop of blood, is a very, very minor thing that is done in the event that the bris was done prior to the eighth day or was done when the convert was still not Jewish. We derive from here also, since it says Uvayom Hashmini in verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, Uvayom Hashmini, on the eighth day, Yimol Besar Arlaso, the Gemara derives from here that the circumcision is done on the eighth day, even if the eighth day comes out on Shabbos. Or even if it is Yom Kippur, or even if it is Yontif, it doesn't make a difference. The eighth day for the bris milah supersedes everything. There is no day of the year that is excluded from the possibility of a bris milah. A bris milah can take place any day of the Jewish calendar, every single day of the year, Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, Shabbos, it makes no difference. A bris milah can be conducted if it is the eighth day. However, that which we say that Ibris Milah is Docha Shabbos, that it is performed even on Shabbos, is only when the Bris Milah is Bizmana, only if it is done in the proper time. Which means that if the, for whatever reason, the Bris was not conducted on the eighth day, for example, the child was not well, and they could not do the Bris on the eighth day, and it was delayed past the eighth day, or in the event of a circumcision for a convert, which would not be on the eighth day, it would be a later time, those types of circumcisions, those types of brisos do not supersede Shabbos. They may not be done on Shabbos. They have to be done during a weekday, which is why the day of the week that statistically has the most brises is Sunday. And the reason is because although for an eighth day bris, it can be done any day of the week, including Shabbos, but if it is not an eighth day bris, it has to get pushed off to after Shabbos. So if a child, for example, was sick and was not able to have the bris on the eighth day and then got better, the moment that they are healthy enough to have the bris milah, we do the bris milah. If it's a Sunday, we do it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But if he becomes healthy on Shabbos, it gets pushed to Sunday, the first possible day that it can be done. So therefore, Sundays become the predominant day for brisos statistically, because there are brisos that come out on Shabbos that need to be pushed off until Sunday. In addition, if a child is born on Friday night, and it is Bein HaShmashos, it is that time that we're unsure whether it is Friday, whether it is Shabbos, we keep it as Shabbos because it might be Shabbos. But it may not be Shabbos. We're not sure. It's that twilight time that we're not sure what day it is. In that case, you cannot give the boy a bris milah on Shabbos because he might have been born on Friday. We don't know. You can't give him a bris on Friday because Friday may only be the seventh day. So we can't do that. But we can't do Shabbos because Shabbos might be the ninth day. We don't know what day of the week it was that he was born. Therefore, we have to push it off to Sunday as well. So that's another example where it would get pushed off to Sunday, even though he was born really on Friday night. Yeah.
Okay. We got all that. Talmud always has more than one reason. So we know for the parents to be together before the wonderful bris. What's another reason?
That's what the Gemara says.
Okay. Then I get to the 14 days and the 16
days. Oh, okay. We haven't got to that yet. Hold on. Hold on.
This is a problem.
It's not a problem.
For me, hearing you, yeah. I know everything else. When the time comes, thank, please God, and we should all be alive, somebody is going to know all these things, and I'm just listening.
Okay. She wants to be one of those people.
Okay. That. Okay, we'll get into it. Okay. Now,
I'll follow him.
I have a question. Yeah. When my son was born, since I had a C-section, and I should have had a bris on the last day of Yom Tov if it was postponed.
Right. A C-section also postpones the bris. Yes, okay. That's right.
Any special reasons?
It's derived. The Gemara derives it from here as well. That it also cannot be done on Shabbos. Okay. That's right. Or Yom Tov.
Does it say in here somewhere, is there a reason why the bris is done during the daytime and not at night if the baby,
that's
9 o'clock at night?
Yeah, that's derived from the word uvayom, on the day.
So, yeah. When the sun is shining.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
After a bris, you're supposed to have a suda. So if a baby is born on Tisha B'Av or a fast day,
the suda is done that night. The bris is done during the day, and the suda is done at night. Yeah, yeah. Now,
that was easy.
Now, because it has to be done, because the bris has to be done during the day, so that's also important in a case like in some cities that are... that are adversely affected by daylight savings time or by standard time, when sunrise can sometimes be as late as 8 o'clock in the morning, some crazy cities like Atlanta, where sunrise can be as late as 8 o'clock in the morning, you can't do the bris before then. The bris has to be done after sunrise. So that's just a point. It's usually done later than that, but sometimes it needs to be done earlier, but it can't be done before sunrise.
In Alaska, do they have periods of time where there is no
Daylight. It depends what part of Alaska. I mean, in the southern parts of Alaska, there's always daylight, at least for
right,
a couple
so
hours.
Say yeah. It was in the people in the north. And
yeah,
what could they
that's,
do
that's a good question. Yeah, there are bigger questions than that. When does Shabbos start? When does Shabbos end? I mean, there's
Rabbi Schloss knows, because when we took that cruise, he told me when the light came.
Okay, yeah, you know, it's complicated. Okay, now, why does she bring two karbanos? The carbon ola, the burnt offering, so that's the carbon for giving birth. But why does a woman who gives birth, why does she also bring a chatas, a sin offering? And it says at the end, of the paragraph here in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, it says, v'chiper aleha ha-kohen v'talheira. The kohen shall atone for her, and she will become pure. What exactly is she atoning for? What did she do wrong that needs atoning? Yeah.
Well, I agree with what they say here.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says that when
I never did that though.
The Gemara says that when a woman is enduring child labor, the pains of child labor, then it is possible that she would take a vow, an oath, that she will never be intimate with her husband again. Because of the intense pain of childbirth. And that's what you're going to say. Okay, so that's what the Gemara says. And as a result, the Torah requires a sin offering to atone for that. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that every woman is going to take an oath. But because it is a very likely possibility, therefore, the Torah requires this carbon to be brought. So now... So now, you asked, why is it that for a son, the period of time of Tumah is 7 days, like a Nida, regular Nida, and for a daughter, it is 14 days? So the Gemara says that the reason is because... And let me finish, please, before you interrupt me too. So... The Gemara says, because when a son is born, before I say this, I want this to be a lesson to everybody in understanding that you have to understand the depth behind something before you jump to conclusions. That's why you can't trust anything that you read in media or hear from people who are unlearned about anything to do with Torah, because they're dealing with things at the surface level, and therefore they are misreading and misunderstanding everything. It's very important that you understand that. The Gemara says the reason why she is tummy for 7 days with a boy is because when a son is born, everybody's happy. But the reason why she's tummy for 14 days with a daughter is because when a daughter is born, everybody is sad.
I don't think so.
Listen. I'm going to repeat myself. The Gemara says when a son is born, everybody is happy. When a daughter is born, everybody is sad. That means everybody is sad. You may not understand why, but everybody is sad. Don't question the Gemara. Don't say it's not true. The Gemara is the truth. Everybody is happy when a son is born. Everybody is sad when his daughter is born. Now, we could stop there. We could stop it right here. I could walk out of the room. You would be obligated to believe that. You understand that? The Torah says it. That means we have to accept it. I'm sorry for getting so worked up about this. But this is a critical piece. Just because no one around this table understands it doesn't mean it isn't true. It is true because the Torah says it. Period. End of story. Our job is to try to understand it. But it is the truth. Now, you want to understand why. So the Marsha explains, the reason why is because when a son is born, remember, why is it that she's going to bring the carbon? Because she just went through terrible child labor. And it is very painful. And she may have even taken an oath that she would never want to be intimate with her husband again. Therefore, she has to bring a carbon. Says the Marsha, when a son is born, a woman and the people around her are happy because a person was born who will never have to endure those pains. Therefore, everybody is happy. But when a daughter is born, a mother says, this child of mine, this precious little baby of mine, is one day going to grow up and have to endure the pain that I just endured. And she just endured it. She doesn't have the luxury of being 6 months or a year later and getting fuzzy in her mind about that pain. It just happened. Therefore, there is an element of sorrow knowing that this child is going to have to endure the same pain. Therefore, the Torah says that there is a longer period of time of separation. Remember, this 7 days and this 14 days is not relevant to the Beis HaMikdash, to Karbanos, and to Truma, because that's going to go on past the 7 days and past the 14 days. What is the primary thing that is being prohibited over here? It is to a spouse. For 7 days after a son is born, they are prohibited to each other because a woman just went through labor, pain. There is no interest in having any kind of connection between husband and wife in that way. Now, it could be that after 7 days, she still might not be feeling up to it, which is certainly possible. However, for 7 days, even if she's feeling physically very fit and healthy and happy, but there is a separation between husband and wife, she just went through terrible pain, and therefore there is separation. But for a daughter, that pain is doubled because she knows that that pain is going to be endured by her daughter when her daughter gets older and has children of her own. Therefore, it is a double separation. However, after this period of separation of 7 days and 14 days, now there's a period of time where husband and wife are permitted to each other in a more lenient fashion than normal circumstances. They're permitted to each other even if the wife bleeds. So that period of time for a boy is 33 days, but for a girl is 66 days. It's doubled. Why is it doubled? Because since the Torah required a longer separation from when a daughter is born initially, the Torah now compensates for that with a double period of time in which there's going to be pure blood, and she's permitted to her spouse for a longer period of time. Because any time that we're going to compromise the relationship between a husband and wife, that always is not a healthy thing, and therefore the Torah here elongates the time that there's going to be a lenient time of permissibility between husband and wife. So therefore we end up with a 7 day separation between husband and wife for a son. The bris is delayed till day 8, when they are now permitted to each other. And to compensate for those days when they were forcibly prohibited to each other, there's 33 days where they are permitted to each other without any rules of nida. Then for a daughter, because of the fact that there's a greater sense of sorrow because of the point that their mother knows that this daughter is going to have to go through the same thing. Therefore, it's a 14-day separation, which is then compensated with a 66-day period of time when there is a more lenient permissibility between husband and wife. And so, when the Gemara says that they are happy when a son is born and sad when a daughter is born, the Gemara is not referring to whether a person wanted a daughter or wanted a son or whatever it is. The Gemara is referring to this particular aspect, the aspect of intimacy or prohibition between husband and wife. That's the discussion over here, because that's all it's relevant to. For that element, for that thing, for a son they are happier, and for a daughter they are sadder. And that is why, the Gemara explains, we have the difference in the time of the days of separation and then the corresponding days, the correlating days of permissibility between husband and wife.
Thank you.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. Even if it didn't make sense, it would still be true. But that's
I accept.
Okay. That shows Hashem's love for us and the rachamim, the sensitivity there. Beautiful.
That's what the Gemara says.
So why 33? Why not 30 or...
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know why it has to come out to 40.
40?
Yeah, obviously.
That's the big number.
Yeah, that's the number, 40 and 80. We know that 40 days is the period of time that is called conception, even though it takes 9 months to have a baby. But 40 days is when the reason why the Gemara says, the reason why it rained for 40 days for the Mabel, for the flood, is because they were involved in relationships that were prohibited, and therefore they brought children, illegitimate children, into the world that take 40 days to conceive, and therefore it rained for 40 days as a punishment for that. Medically today, they are aware that around day 40 from conception, at that point, there is already the fetus has features that are discernible in as limbs or whatever it is. There's already there's something discernible there, more so than before then. That is an identifiable milestone in the development of a fetus. So that's 40 days. So I assume that that's what we're talking about for a son, and then for a daughter it's doubled to 80 days. I assume that's what it is, but I don't know for sure. Yeah.
Why does this oath require a sin offering, and are there any other oaths that require sin offering?
So the Gemara tells us that a person who takes an oath is a sinner. We should not be taking oaths under normal circumstances. Now, it's true that there is no particular karban. There's no offering that is designated for a person who just takes an oath. Now, a person who takes an oath and then violates it, that's different. But for a person who just takes an oath, we don't normally find a karban. So you're right. Over here, it's the one case that I'm aware of where there is a rule to bring a karban for an oath. But you see, over here, remember, she didn't actually take the oath. I mean, she might have, but she didn't have to actually have done it. All women who have a baby have to bring this karban. So it is just a rule that has to be done, but it is not for the specific act of uttering the oath, because she may not have done that.
And the husband could have negated it automatically.
He could have negated it. That's true. He could have negated it. That's true. That is true. If anybody's wondering, when Mashiach comes, so will a woman have to bring karbanos for the children that she has had? The answer is yes. She'll have to bring karbanos for the children that she has had, because we all owe a certain amount of karbanos that we haven't brought. Childbirth is one of them. A convert has to bring a karban when they become a convert. Well, today you can't bring a karban, but when Mashiach comes and we have a Beis HaMikdash, the converts will have to bring a karban, because they were supposed to when they became a convert. It's also part of the system. So this is a backlog of karbanos that people have. This is one example of those karbanos. Now, when there are multiple children, so a woman has two boys, two girls, or a boy and a girl, or whatever it is, so then those karbanos do add up, and she has to bring more karbanos depending on the situation. The Gemara discusses various combinations, whether one karban can count for two, or whether there has to be a separate one for each one, and there's a lot of discussion about that. That's a fairly complex discussion.
I'm just wondering about the days.
Yeah, so with the days, we'd have to be stringent, which means that we would use the daughter, because the daughter is longer on both ends. So that's what we would do. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Okay. Now, one last point about this paragraph before we'll move on to the next paragraph next week. But before we do that, before we leave this paragraph, the Gemara says Parashas Tazria right here, which discusses the tumah of childbirth. That's what it really starts with, and then moves on to tzara'as. So the Gemara says, just as when Hashem created the world, He created the animals first, then He created people, so too, when discussing Tumah and Tara, first the Torah discusses the animal world, birds, fish, animals, then discusses people. Now the truth is that when we discuss Tumah and Tara in last week's Parsha, in Parsha Shmini, what we're doing until now, it was all relevant to people. What happens if a person comes in contact with the animal, etc. But the person wasn't the source of the tumah. The source of the tumah was the animal, or the whatever carcass, whatever it was. Here, the source of the tumah is the person themselves. The woman who gives birth, she herself is tumah. It's not because she touched something. She herself is the source of tumah. Person gets tsara'as, they're not tumah because they touched tsara'as. They're tumah because they have tsara'as. They are the source of tumah themselves. So this follows the previous discussion. And one other point to be made, I'm sorry, I thought that was the only other point, but there's one other point to be made, which is that it is often asked, why should there be tumah at all when there is childbirth? Why would childbirth create tumah? Why should there be tumah? So the general understanding of tumah, and I say general because it doesn't fit every single case, but the general understanding of tumah is that tumah is when you have the absence of life. So that a dead carcass of an animal, there can be tumah. Of course, a dead body of a person, that's the highest level of tumah, where there's the absence of life. A woman who was carrying a fetus for 9 months, so she has an additional life inside of her. When her body now lets go of that additional life, so now there is a tumah because there is a certain element of life that has left her. Now, of course, it's a happy occasion. That life is now its own life, having been brought into the world. It's not a bad thing. But nevertheless, from her own perspective, just her own self, she had really two lives that now have one. I once met an OBGYN who told me that the reason why he's an OBGYN rather than another form of medicine is because it's the only form of medicine where you start with one patient and you end with two. So he really felt that it was a very special thing that, you know, there's a new, which it is a very special thing, the new life in the world. It's unbelievable. It's miraculous. But still, from the woman's own perspective, she goes from having two lives to one life. The minhagim that we have, for example, let's say kaparos, that are done before Yom Kippur, where you use either a chicken or you use money, and you say zech alifasi, etc. So when a woman is pregnant, the minhag is, the custom is to do for the fetus as well, because she's doing for two. She's herself and for the fetus. And now the baby is outside of her body, so there is I don't want to call it a loss of life, God forbid, but it is a diminishing of life within herself. And so that's one understanding why that should create a level of tumah. Okay, be that as it may, that explanation of tumah doesn't cover every single case, but that is a very common approach to explaining how tumah and tara work. Okay, so Mirz Hashem, next week we'll begin Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13, and we'll get into Tzara'as, which will take us throughout the rest of this parasha. Yeah.
I had heard along that line that what you described as an intensity of life is the Shekhinah that accompanies the child.
Very interesting.
Right. And that there's a proportionality between the loss of that energy or Shekhinah and the amount of tummy that results from that blood. And with a male, there is less, it's probably not said right, there is less of a Shekhinah present and therefore a less loss than a female who would have greater presence of Shekhinah.
Why would there be greater presence for a female?
Because that would be a speculation, because she has the potential.
Because the Torah says so somewhere.
And she goes through more also.
It doesn't.
Well, it could.
I was going to say the same thing to you after class. I essentially learned that during a Bina class one time.
Years ago,
that the female has more spirituality.
You have to explain why that should be true. As far as I know, men and women are equal. So you can't answer these questions by saying women have more spirituality. That doesn't answer the question either.
So why do they tell us that women have more bina than men?
It's true. Men have more das and women have more bina. That's a little more sense.
All people are equal, but some are more equal than
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, And if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.